Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 8, Text 44. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sutta Uvacha. Pratiyetam Kulapadai. Parinuta Kilodaya. Padam jahasa vaikunto mohayan eva mayaya. Sutta Goswami said, the Lord, thus hearing the prayers of Kunti Devi, composed in choice words for his glorification, mildly smiled. That smile was as enchanting as his mystic power. Purport, anything that is enchanting in the world is said to be a representation of the Lord. The conditioned souls who are engaged in trying to lord it over the material world are also enchanted by his mystic powers. But his devotees are enchanted in a different way by the glories of the Lord and his merciful blessings upon them. His energy is displayed in different ways as electrical energy works in manifold capacities. Srimati Kunti Devi has prayed to the Lord just to enunciate a fragment of his glories. All his devotees worship him in that way by chosen words, and therefore the Lord is known as Uttama Shloka. No amount of chosen words is sufficient to enumerate the Lord's glories, and yet he is satisfied by such prayers, as the father is satisfied even by the broken linguistic attempts of the growing child. The word Maya is used both in sense of delusion and mercy. Herein, the word Maya is used in the sense of the Lord's mercy. Omigana timarangasya jnananjana shalakaya taksur mugatam yena tamsmai sri gurave namaha sri chaitanya mano gustam Sapitam yena bhutale sayambhupa kadamayam dadati sapadantikam pancha kalpa turubhyascha kripa shindu vaye vacha patitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So greetings from Vrindavan, and I'm leaving in 2 days to go to Moscow, and then I'll return to America. This class is a little difficult because it's at night, and in India, even though it's 7:30 here, it corresponds to something much later. So I usually go to bed even earlier than this. But it's an incredibly happening place. Every day, people coming, and we're working and serving to give people the Bhakti Lata Beach, which is faith. The Bhakti Lata Beach is an experience of the soul. That's what faith is. Faith is an experience of the soul. And it seems that in Vrindavan, in Vrindavan, you can give people that experience kind of easier than any place else.
And more intensely also. So it's a wonderful save, and I have a team of people here with Jai Sri Radhe and Leela Velasini and other people helping me, and we're just really busy. I mean, in the morning I have a class at 7:45. I'm not going to talk too much about myself more, but got a class at a little bit more, 7:45. And I took people out. I got back. Then Indradyumna Swami had this incredible program at his place with all these people from America. I also had taken it in the day. I class at 4:00 and saying goodbye to people, meeting people, then back to Indradyumna Swami, and now back to the class. So prayers of Kunti are finished. I skipped a little ahead because I'm kind of a little tired at night. I had to more choose my verses than normally. And,
Krishna was satisfied by the prayers and he smiled. And it's describing the beauty of God's smile. When you think of anything that has some attractiveness, then it's infinitely multiplied when it's directly a manifestation of God. And the prayers here are appreciated, even though they can't sufficiently do justice to the Lord's glories. We're talking about the concept of infinite. God's beauty is infinitely beauty. There's nothing that can be more beautiful, and you can't quantify it. You can't quantify it. So how do you glorify something that you really can't quantify? Well, you make the attempt, like a child here who has broken linguistic attempts of the growing child. You make an attempt. And even though you can't do justice to quantify the Lord by glorification, the attempt that's done with love touches the absolute truth. Because God's manifest in our love. God is not a corporal distance, a material distance from us. You can go anywhere as far as you want, as long as you want. You'll never reach God. God is another dimension. And that dimension is crossed by faith. And faith, that experience of love in the heart, unites the finite with the infinite. So, anything enchanting in the world represents God, and he reciprocates. I quoted many times how Prabhupada said that Krishna is responsive. So he reciprocates, and that's fulfilling our desire. Because when you have love, what to speak at the level of prema? You have love, what to speak at the level of prema? So there's no words that are sufficient to enumerate the Lord's glory, but he's satisfied. He's satisfied with our love. And the understanding that there's no way to quantify his glories. Because that consciousness that we can deserve God really diminishes or limits God. Okay, text 845. Kambaramit yupa mantra pravishya gajasa vayam siyascha swaparam yasyam prema raja nivarita. Thus accepting the prayers of Srimati Kunti Devi, the Lord subsequently informed other ladies of his departure by entering the palace of Hastinapur. But upon preparing to leave, he was stopped by King Yudhisthira, who implored him lovingly, purport, no one can make Lord Krishna stay at Hastinapur when he decided to start for Dwarka. But the simple request of King Yudhisthira that he remain there a few more days was immediately effective. This signifies that the power of King Yudhisthira was loving affection, which the Lord could not deny. The Almighty God is thus conquered only by loving service and nothing else. He is fully independent in all his dealings, but he voluntarily accepts obligations by the loving affection of his devotees. So part of the importance of this section, part of the importance of this section is that Krishna is introduced. We mentioned this before, that Maharaj Prickett, the question here is about Maharaj Prickett. It's at the beginning that Sutta inquired about the sages, Namacharanya inquired about the Bhagavatam. They want to know about the personalities. And right now, the rest of the Bhagavatam is telling about Maharaj Prickett. But because about his birth was so glorious because Krishna was there, the Bhagavatam brings us right into Krishna and his loving dealings with the devotees, which is seen by Krishna leaving. It's seen by Krishna leaving and how people feel in that mood of separation. They don't want him to leave because part of love is wanting to be with your beloved. It's just a natural part of love to be with your beloved. And so somehow mine's not working so good, but I'll try anyway today. So Yudhisthira implores him to stay, and a devotee is and God is controlled by love. That is God's glory. That's the strength of someone. Personality means reciprocation, and reciprocation means you are controlled by love. There's no other meaning of reciprocation. Why are you responding? You're responding by the force of love. And therefore, God's greatness is that he's controlled by love. It doesn't make him weaker. It enhances his personality, and he's the supreme personality. And this is the essence of bhakti. The essence of bhakti is that God is controlled by love. And therefore we advance by the reciprocation of God, which is called grace. It's the path of grace. We can't earn God, but we can attract God by our love. And that's what happens with Yudhisthira. That's what happens by Yudhisthira. He loves him so much, and Krishna loves him, and thus he has to move. Vyasadhyay Ishvare Hagyay Krishnena Bhuta Karmana Kabodito Pitahasai
Abhudyeta Sucharpita.
King Yudhisthira, who is very much aggrieved, could not be convinced, despite instructions by Vyasa and the Lord Krishna himself, the performer of superhuman feats, and despite all historical evidence. So when you have despondency, knowing that everything is coming by God, understanding how it's coming by God and why it's coming by God is very, very pacifying. And as all problems are perceptual and not actual, then knowledge can solve all problems. But we do have very, very trying things to understand. We have very, very trying things to understand in this world. And that's what Dharma is. What Dharma means is we have a myriad of choices. And there's a science of what is the right choice according to who we are and what our circumstance is. So there's always a way to respond to the world for your benefit if you can understand it. And we become very pacified when we meet people of wisdom who have that understanding. So Yudhisthira was very aggrieved because he was enthroned the cause of him being enthroned was winning a war, which meant many people would die, including his relatives. So he was confused because he did his duty. But look at the result. And you know, Dharma is supposed to lead to auspiciousness. But he did his duty. But the result is people were killed, even his relatives. And he was so despondent. And despondency is generally a symptom of doing something wrong. So he couldn't understand, like, what did I do wrong? But at the same sense, he's feeling so much distress for all the people that were killed. So as soon as he sits on the throne, he feels, what is the cause of me sitting on the throne? And then the what is the cause of me sitting on the throne? And he becomes depressed. He gets the throne, but the cause is all these people being killed. And it's the same dilemma Arjuna had. And if he didn't fight, then him and his family would be killed. So basically, he couldn't understand why the world moved so unfavorably around him, despite the fact that he was doing Dharma. Generally, what happens is difficult circumstances that come around us is only the way for God to teach us a lesson that we were incapable of learning by hearing. We did something wrong. We're not cognizant that it is wrong or how wrong it is. We have to learn our lesson. We can hear. And therefore, God arranges in the future some circumstances around us to teach us the same lesson that we couldn't understand in our life. But Yudhisthira, he was just all righteous. He can understand, well, what am I supposed to learn from this? because I'm already Dharma Raj. I already know the principles of religion. I'm already behaving properly. So you can't understand why should suffering come to a person like him who is so righteous if God is actually the controller of the world. And there's a whole philosophy called theodicy. And theodicy means it's the science of it's the school of theology that's trying to reconcile evil with the existence of God, or intense suffering with the existence of God. And it's actually one of the biggest quandaries, and it's actually the strongest argument against the existence of God. So we'll read. The pious King Yudhisthira was mortified because of the mass massacre of human beings in the Battle of Kurukshetra, especially on his account. Duryodhana was there on the throne, and he was doing well in his administration, and in one sense, there was no need of fighting. But on the principle of justice, Yudhisthira was to replace him. The whole clique of politics centered around this point, and all the kings and residents of the whole world became involved in this fight between the rival brothers. Lord Krishna was also there on the side of King Yudhisthira. It is said in the Mahabharata Adi Parva 225 that 640 million men were killed in the 18 days of the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and some hundreds of thousands were missing. Practically, this was the greatest battle in the world within 5,000 years. So war is hell. How fortunate are most of us that we never had to live through a war that affected us? And I think most of the world practically does. How hellish is that? How hellish is that? You know, my father's generation was called the greatest generation. You know, they all went out and they fought for freedom. What did we do? And I couldn't imagine the level of anxiety going off to war when you know you can die and seeing so many other people die. See, he went through this. And he's crushed by it because he doesn't understand it. The mass killing simply to enthrone Maharaj Yudhisthira was too mortifying, so he tried to be convinced with evidences from histories by great sages like Vyas and the Lord himself that the fight was just because the cause was just. The Maharaj Yudhisthira would not be satisfied, even though he was instructed by the greatest personalities of the time. Krishna is designated herein as the performer of superhuman actions. But in this particular instance, neither he nor Vyas could convince Yudhisthira. This is one of the most fascinating things in the Mahabharata or the Bhagavatam, that Krishna himself, Yudhisthira, goes depressed. And when you go to a great saintly person who knows the Shastra, there's some sense that he can relieve our anxiety by the proper knowledge that we'll actually see the mercy of the Lord even in the most difficult circumstance. You know, there's a saying, a Persian saying, when the Lord is digging a ditch to throw one in, he's actually digging a well to quench your thirst. So there's that type of real confidence. There's that type of real confidence. But Krishna can't give him that confidence. And nor Vyas. No, does it mean that he failed to be a superhuman actor? No, certainly not. The interpretation is that the Lord is Ishvara, or the Supersoul, in the hearts of both King Yudhisthira and Vyas, perform still more superhuman action because the Lord desired it. As super soul of King Yudhisthira, he did not allow the king to be convinced by the words of Vyasa and others, including himself, because he desired that the king hear instructions from the dying Bhishma Dev, who is another great devotee of the Lord. So, even though Krishna and Vyasa were instructing him, Savasya Chaham Hidi Sani Vishto Matasmitir Gyanam Aponacha, I am situated in everyone's heart, and for me comes remembrance, forgetfulness, and knowledge. So within the heart is a super soul. Krishna didn't allow Yudhisthira to understand the instructions. It's not unusual that truth can be spoken and not be understood. There's so many reasons for that. One reason is we don't want to hear the truth. That's one of the big reasons. I see that all the time. People don't like the truth. The truth doesn't satisfy their ego. The truth doesn't satisfy their needs or their desires, or opposes their desires. That's why someone who speaks the truth has to be a Brahmin. He has to be detached. Because if you're not detached, then your attachments compromise what you'll say. Either you'll be afraid to say the truth, and what to speak of understanding the truth. It's so difficult for some people. Because they want something else besides the truth. They want something that justifies something that they need or want. Even though Vyas and Krishna spoke the truth, Yudhisthira wasn't able to hear it. And this reason was Krishna just didn't give him the intelligence within the heart. And he had that reason because Krishna is always seeking to glorify his devotee. This is a very essential point in devotional service, that Krishna loves us and he wants to benedict us. The Lord wanted that at the last stage of his material existence, the great warrior Bhishma Dev see him personally and see his beloved grandchildren, King Yudhisthira, etc., now situated on the throne and thus passing away very peacefully. So Bhishma Dev's dying. He's a great devotee of the Lord, but he wants Bhishma Dev to, among other things, he wants to glorify Bhishma Dev by having him answer the questions of Yudhisthira. But he also wants him to see before he leaves that his grandchild is situated properly now, and thus he can pass away peacefully. Bhishma Dev was not at all satisfied to fight against the Pandavas, who were his beloved fatherless grandchildren. But the Kshatriyas are also very stern people, and therefore he was obliged to take the side of Duryodhana because he was maintained at the expense of Duryodhana. Besides this, the Lord also desired that King Yudhisthira be pacified by the words of Bhishma Dev, so the world could see that Bhishma Dev excelled all in knowledge, including the Lord himself. The Lord wants his devotee glorified because that's the principle that the Lord wants people to follow in the world. Yadyaratrita Shreshtas Tatareve Tarojana. Whatever great men do, common men will follow. The Lord, and therefore proper society has the proper exemplars. And exemplars of character, they mold the whole society because people will follow them. In fact, the main way children learn is by exemplars. So the Lord wants the exemplars of the right behavior, especially of sacrifice and devotion, to be known. and to be glorified and to be appreciated, because that which you appreciate comes into your heart. Bhakti is simply based on liking. If you like to please the Lord, that's pure devotional service. And when you have other likings besides to please the Lord, then it's not pure devotional service. Or if you have both, it's mixed devotional service. So those that like the Lord, the Lord wants to glorify, so other people appreciate that and appreciate that principle of pure devotional service. King Yudhisthira, the son of Dharma, overwhelmed by the death of his friends, was aggrieved just like a common materialistic man. O sages, thus deluded by affection, he began to speak. King Yudhisthira, though he was not expected to become aggrieved like a common man, became deluded by worldly affection, by the will of the Lord, just as Arjuna was apparently deluded. A man who knows well that the living entity is neither the body nor the mind, but is transcendental. A man who sees, knows well that the living entity is neither the body nor the mind, but is transcendental to the material conception of life. The common man thinks of violence and nonviolence in terms of the body, but that is a kind of delusion. Everyone is duty-bound according to one's occupational duties. A kshatriya is bound to fight for the right cause, regardless of the opposite party. In such a discharge of duty, one should not be disturbed by annihilation of the material body, which is only an external dress of the living soul. All this was perfectly known to Maharaj Yudhisthira, but by the will of the Lord, he became just like a common man, because there was another great idea behind this delusion. The Lord would be instructed by Bhishma as Arjuna was being instructed by the Lord himself. So the Lord instructs us through his devotees, because there's relationship. And he can't perfectly use people who are not devotees to set that example. Prabhupada gives the example, he'll give it later on, that in an Indian joint family, when a girl gets married, she goes to the husband's house. So she doesn't yet have a relationship with the mother. So it's hard for the mother to instruct her. What the mother does is instruct the daughter, so that indirectly the daughter-in-law will learn until there's relationship. So similarly, the Lord instructs us through the devotees. And he even instructs us how to be enlightened by the devotees who are put in delusion for that purpose, and it's only a devotee that can play that role. And therefore, it's the same with Arjuna, and they're condemned. Kutastvam kashmilamidam vishame samuparsvidam anarya jasta asvaga akirtam kari Arjuna. O Arjuna, where is these impurities come upon you? They don't benefit a high-class man who knows the values of life. So the delusion is directly put in comes by the Lord's will, so that these great personalities can participate in an event of enlightenment. But enlightenment requires someone to be enlightened. So great devotees play the role of someone who needs to be enlightened so that the process of enlightenment can be demonstrated, just like in the Bhagavad Gita. Yudhisthira said, O my lot, I am a most simple man. Just see my heart, which is full of ignorance. This body, which is ultimately meant for others, has killed many, many phalanxes of men. Our body is meant for others. We are meant for others. Our soul is meant for others. That's the constitutional position of a living entity. He's a servant. Krishnara Nityadas. Anyway, I'm forgetting simple verses, but anyway, we're servants. That's our nature. We're meant for others. That's a principle of devotional service. We're consciousness which reaches its fruition in love. And love means for others. We're meant for love. We're meant for devotion. We're meant for others. Yudhishthira is lamenting that the body is meant for others has killed now so many people. Purport, a solid phalanx of 21,870 chariots, 21,870 elephants, 109,650 infantry, and 65,600 cavalry is called an Akshahini. And many Akshahinis were killed on the Battle of Kurukshetra. Maharaj Yudhishthira, as the most pious king of the world, takes for himself the responsibility for killing such a huge number of living entities because the battle was fought to reinstate him on the throne. His body is, after all, meant for others. While there is life in the body, it is meant for the service of others. When it is dead, it is meant to be eaten by dogs and jackals or maggots. He is sorry because for such a temporary body, such a huge massacre was committed. This is the proper consciousness, that we're meant for others. The hand is meant for the body. We're meant for God. We're made of God and we're made for God. And therefore, we fold our hands in front of our chest, which is the mudra for these hands that have been used selfishly are now for others. We move the body in a place where we want the mind to go. So this is the principle of life. Even in the Krishna book, when the Nagapatnis are trying to save their husband, Kaliya, from Krishna's wrath after Kaliya poisoned the river and tried to kill Krishna, said he must be good because he has your feet on his head. Did he perform the compassion of serving others? That's a direct indication that that type of consciousness gets you the lotus feet of Krishna. Did you perform? You have the lotus feet of Krishna on your head? Did you perform the compassion of serving others? Jiva doi Krishna nam sarva dharma sar. The essence of all religion is to show mercy to people. But he's lamenting, I've killed many boys, Brahmins, well-wishers, friends, parents, preceptors, and brothers. Though I live millions of years, I will not be relieved from the hell that awaits me for all these sins. Purport. Whenever there is a war, there is certainly a massacre of many innocent living beings, such as boys, Brahmins, and women, whose killing is considered to be the greatest of sins. They're all innocent creatures, and in all circumstances, killing of them is forbidden in scriptures. Yudhishthira was aware of these mass killings. Similarly, there were friends, parents, and preceptors also on both sides, and all of them were killed. It was simply horrible for him to think of such killing. And therefore, he was thinking of residing in hell for millions and billions of years. So even though he's a Kshatriya, there's a certain soft-heartedness. And in one sense, in the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is glorified for his soft-heartedness and condemned that it was misapplied. But nonetheless, it's a saintly quality. It's not, you know, he's compassionate, and he sees so many people killed, and he's suffering for it. And that's the emblem. In one sense, if it's properly applied, that's the emblem of high consciousness. It's called para dukkha dukkhi. I have no suffering, but I suffer for others. And the same thing of happiness. Jiva Goswami says that happiness is the happiness of others. Real happiness is love, and love is the happiness of others and the happiness of God. So we see he's saintly, but he's suffering because he doesn't have a clear understanding of where his emotions and sentiments should be rested. There's no sin for a king who kills for the right cause, who is engaged in maintaining his citizen. But this injunction is not applicable to me. Mars Yudhisthira thought that although he was actually involved in the administration of the kingdom, which was being carried on well by Duryodhana without harm to the citizens, he caused the killing of so many living beings only for his personal gain of kingdom from the hands of Duryodhana. The killing was committed not in the course of administration, but for the sake of self-aggrandizement, and such he thought himself responsible for all the sins. So the citizens weren't suffering. Duryodhana was a good manager. So it was to enthrone him. So he felt horrible about it. He felt horrible about it. And it's so nice to see that, even though it may be sentimental and misapplied, to see that heart. We know that Vaishnavism means heart, and the heart has to become open. Therefore, we're not Vairagis. We give up those things which cannot be used in Krishna's service, and use those things, keep those things that can be used in Krishna's service, because engaging with them keeps the heart open. I've killed many friends of women, and I've thus caused enemy to such an extent that it's not possible to undo it by material welfare work. Okay, because it's very late, I'm kind of going to have to stop here. Are there any questions? I think the classes will get a little bit more dynamic. Yeah, hi, Bo.
Swamiji, it's Mooney, Dandava Pranam.
Hi, Bo. Ray, Mooney, thank you. So happy to hear from you.
Swamiji? Marsh?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. My phone got messed up. I have a question about glorification, if I may. So you mentioned that it's important to the Lord to glorify his devotees and that he's sometimes motivated to do so. So what I'm wondering is, because that makes sense to me, but when I think about things like the Bhagavad Gita teaches us that we should be indifferent to our own personal glory, right, in honor or dishonor. And there's an interesting reason why I was thinking, too, like when Aristotle tried to explain what the goal of life was, he said that fame is not really the ultimate goal of life, because fame is dependent on a lot of things that you have nothing to do with, like public attitudes and biases and things. So to say that the goal of life would be fame in some way doesn't make sense. When we look around today, Marge, look at the political elections in America. The rabble tends to choose things, weird emotions that, like the internet gives you lack of faith in the public judgment, right? Just listen to the news. So why would Krishna care about glorifying his devotees down here in the world of death?
Oh, I thought you'd ask me a more difficult question.
What I'm getting at is why would he care? Like the idea that he should care to have a devotee glorified. Given all those reasons, glorification seems very superficial and dependent on luck and dependent on, like, people's biases. So why would that be important to the Lord to glorify his devotees down here?
Well, I'd say this, he didn't want him glorified for cheap reason. He wanted him glorified for their actual attainment throughout their whole life in devotion. And it's not necessarily he wants them glorified to satisfy the devotee, because they may be detached from that, but wants them glorified because it's good. It's good for people to appreciate the right things, and they'll become like that when the right things are appreciated. So I think, too, there was kind of like a thread that he was doing it to Bhijmate, you know. But I think it's just natural. It's natural expression of love, whether a person wants to or not, you know. Just like, for example, you know, a great personality may come and he may be very detached, but you may still want to give him nice food, you know? And you don't say, well, why should we give him nice food? Because, you know, what kind of example is that? You know what I'm saying? It just makes the person, you know, maybe gluttonous or makes it, that's what he wants, nice food. But he does it because he wants to show love. And love is accepted in that way. So in the same sense, Krishna is expressing his love for his devotee. And it's not just cheap adulation, but the devotee may also feel that love. And that's natural because that's what bhakti is. It's a reciprocation, so it's part of bhakti. So I think it's quite apropos to kind of glorify. It's for the benefit of the person glorifying. It's a benefit to humanity, and it's an exchange of love.
Okay, thank you. I'll think about that, Marge, but you seem to think there was a deeper question I was going to ask. What do you think that was, if I may ask you?
The deeper question is, why does God always want glorification? That was the deeper question. Someone asked me in my class, you know, they were talking about Uddhava. You know, the question was, Uddhava was like, there was a whole purport about, I was reading some other commentary, it wasn't Prabhupada, but it was a whole thing about, you know, the devotee only wants the remnants of God, you know, and everything he does is only the remnants. You know, it went on and on. They gave this verse by Yudhisthira, Uddhava, he only wore the remnants of God, and we should own everything as the remnants of God. You know, and then someone asked, well, I don't understand this, because in my family, even if we love it, what kind of, you know, thing is that everybody wants the remnants, you know? You know? It doesn't seem to...
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to have like a sense to it, you know. But it because the tough question is, it gets down to the fact that even though it's scorned upon for us to be the enjoyers, it's God's role to be the enjoyer, you know. And it's very, very hard for us to understand that. It's God's role to be the enjoyer, because he is the supreme enjoyer. He is, you know, so so I thought it's more that question, you know, about why God wants to be glorified and have us take his remnants and, you know, something like that.
I liked your answer to that. I thought
what was my answer to that?
That it's just
what was my answer?
There are facts that constitutionally it just happens to be the case that there's an ultimate reality that we're subservient to. And that's just like if there's an ultimate reality that we're subservient to, it means that from the perspective of the ultimate reality, it's above us. That's also part of reality. And so being glorified by us is dharma. It's just the way things are. And so it's hard for us to understand, because from our perspective, we're always talking about humility. But that's because there is something greater than us. And that thing which is greater is deserving of respect, that it's just a fabric of reality. I thought that's how I understood it.
And it's so much greater. And it's so much greater. It's inconceivably greater. It's infinitely greater. And it's healthy for us to have that consciousness.
Marge,
it's so much greater. Yeah, good.
I apologize. I didn't mean to cut you off. It was the phone give and take. I'm sorry.
No,
I
want to hear
it. It's funny because,
I want to speak.
There's ways where, like, you know, I have children now. Like, I have kids, and I think it's natural. Kids should respect their parents. And I'm not saying that in a fearful way. And I'm not saying the parents should gloat over the children. But if the children don't respect the parents, there's been a breakdown in healthy relationships. So I think even in this world, there's a lot of examples of that. Like in a world where parents and kids are buddies, I mean, maybe when the kids grow up, but when they're young, that's psychologically unhealthy. And there's a way in which there's a certain kind of love, loving someone who's benefited you and greater than you in some limited way, that child will lose out on. And so I think even in this world, we can see reflections of that when in healthy, respectful love between parents and kids. Of course, you know, in America, it's like a parent has to fight with their kid to do that, to take out the garbage, right? So maybe that love has been lost even as we've kicked off the shackles of unhealthy superiors. Maybe we've lost some of that appropriate, respectful love.
I think we have. We have. You saw my article, which will come out on Monday. Is surrender a bad word?
That's what I'm thinking of.
Another
right
thing, someone just sent me another article that, you know, written and said that it's ridiculous to question a word that just because it's not true to its etymological meaning, right? And he gave the example that das was a term that was given kind of like by the Aryans or something, you know, a derogatory term to people who were supposed to serve them or something, you know, something
right.
like
no, it's
that.
True.
But the Vaishnavas picked it up as a very exalted thing, and they said they're Krishna Das Kaviraj, Das Anu Das. So to say that the etymological meaning is negative and therefore we can't use it in a positive way, it's just the way words are used, you know.
I'm sorry. Forgive me, please. Please.
No, I want to hear. Go ahead. No, listen.
So the grammarians, the Vyakaranas in ancient India, there's a standard phrase they have that usage trumps etymology when it comes to words. Common usage will always be stronger than etymology. That's just standard. So, like, and then that's just how words work. And so, if, you know, if we were going to say, what does some word mean? Whatever the etymology is, common usage is going to be more powerful because that's how the term is actually being employed. I'm just agreeing with you. I'm just saying there's this
old tradition. Yeah, I mean, it's just a simple point. But people that take out Monier Williams' dictionary and tell you that this is what the word should be used.
Well,
and it's used in a completely different way.
And by the way, Marge, Monier Williams' dictionary is based on looking into books and saying, oh, here's how this word was used in a book. And so it all depends on what book they're citing. It all depends on when that book was written. Context matters. And if you don't know history, it's going to be really hard to discuss these things seriously.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Mark.
I think you needed a discussion today. I really have to go. If one or two people want to say hello.
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. Wonderful class.
Thank you for being on it. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, people have any problem unmuting. I have to go on it. Hi, Bo. Thank you. Bunch of couple through this second.